This elicited emphatic tilts from the table. The daguerreotype incident is very good. The existence of the picture is only known to my wife and children, and it is the only portrait of Viola in my possession that has not at some time or the other been used as a test. It has never left the house. The description is not perfect, but so nearly so as to make it absolutely certain what it was my guide wished to indicate through Mrs. Endicker. There were many other communications through the table, but they were mostly rubbish, and not worth recording. Throughout there was a knowledge shown of Tain affairs. I now give an instance of a lying spirit, Diaca, that manifested in this cottage the following year, at 3:40 p.m., Monday, August 17, 1908. I commenced a sitting with a fisherman, Mr. Endicott, and his wife, at 11 St. Peter's Terrace, Brixham, Devonshire. The meteorological conditions were satisfactory. At 3:50 table tilted, and a guide called Racker made himself known, and promised to guard the circle. At 3:55 a vigorous spirit made herself known, and gave the following information in answer to questions put by me, Sarah Matheson. Passed over in London, at the Savoy Hotel, on September 9, 1891, from cancer of the throat, at the age of 33, widow of a soldier, colonel of artillery in the English army. Lived at Macklinwater, near Dumbarton. Passed out 17 years ago. Husband passed out with sun fever 8 years before me, when I was 26 years of age. Q. What caused you to come to us today? A. Perceived a bright spirit light. Harris is father's name. Only one child, spirit babe, Ida, who died when 1 year old, buried at Dumbarton. I attended Protestant church, Scotch church. Sister, Mary Louisa Harris, in Leith now, cannot give her address. Gordon was the first name of my husband. Mrs. Endicott described the spirit as a tall, big, straight woman. During the above communication the table tilted down towards Mr. Endicott. I have made particular inquiries at the War Office, Dumbarton, Leith, the Savoy Hotel, and of two old officers of the Royal Artillery. There is no such place as Macklinwater, and there never was an artillery officer in the English Army called Gordon Matheson. There is a negative sort of value about even this communication. It shows a knowledge of Tain affairs, and therefore probably emanated from someone who once lived on Earth. I have alluded above to certain tests by photographs. It will be remembered that I found this plan of testing the powers of clairvoyants successful in America. On my return to England I increased the number in the packet to 20, and later to 40. Friendly critics had said to me, "It is all very well, but the psychic can see into your mind and sense the image of the person whose picture you expect to receive." This done, the task of selecting the picture from the pack is easy. Among the 20 or 40 carte de visite, therefore, I always took care to have two of Viola at widely different ages and in different attitudes. It occurred to me that, if the clairvoyante by normal means could pick out the composite portrait of these two that are said to be in my mind, it would be a more remarkable way of accounting for the selection than by the spirit hypothesis. Propose now to record how many times this test succeeded. But before doing so I will note a rather different test. 38. I have already referred to Mrs. Aline, one of the members of our investigation societies in London, who usually sat on the left of Husk at the seances we held with him. During many of these pleasant evenings I was her neighbor, consequently when Iola appeared she could be as well seen by Mrs. Aline as by me. Husband generally manifested about the same time as my guide, and I argued that he should be well acquainted with the latter and be able to pick out her portrait. On June 20, 1905, after Iola had appeared twice to us both together, I handed to Mrs. Aline 12 photos in a closed packet, and asked her to be so kind as to take it home and to beg her husband to pick out the portrait of the spirit she had seen. A week later she returned me the packet, and showed me the photo that her husband had selected. It was the only picture of Viola in the pack. She told me that she had laid the photographs out in a line on a ouija board in her room, that her husband, through her hand holding the pointer, had first indicated by the letters of the alphabet, take the third from the right, and had then pushed the required portrait out of the row exposed to view. Now, of course, Husk had nothing to do with this phenomenon, as the selection was made at Mrs. Allen's home. Neither Mrs. Allen nor her husband when in Earth life had ever known Iola. The only person in London who knew the spirit or her photograph was myself, and I was 3 miles away when the selection was made. There was not a single normal circumstance that could have assisted in the selection except that Mrs. Allen had twice seen the materialized face of a spirit. If that helped her in the choice, so much the better for the mediumship of Husk, but I doubt if it could have conveyed much to the brain of the lady, because on both occasions the face was muffled under the nose, and only a sitter like myself, who was well acquainted with the original, could recognize the likeness. I do not record here any photographic test as a success unless one of the portraits of the spirit alleged to be present was selected outside my range of vision at first shot. To have two handed to you as was done by Mrs. Endicott on 2 occasions, separated by 12 months, and when the number in the pack was 40, is rare, and cannot be expected except in the case of clairvoyants of the first rank. Mr. Peters, in a private interview on July 7, 1905, handed me one picture of Iola, whom he had previously described accurately, out of a packet of 20. There were 2 in the collection. The second he handed me was a portrait of her younger living sister, who has been alluded to in these notes. 39. This medium described an article of dress worn by the spirit that I have never seen. In fact, it was so unusual that I declared I did not believe she had ever worn it. Peters firmly adhered to his statement, and denied that there was any mistake in his clairvoyant vision. Some days afterwards I had an opportunity of inquiring into the truth of this allegation, and discovered that 50 years before there had been such an article in vogue, and that, as a little girl, Iola had actually worn it for about 6 months. Peters also described to naval officers. 1, he remarked, says he was under you in some foreign place. His name is Fred. I hear the name Moore. Moore. Rolls a newspaper up into the size and shape of a small telescope. He is holding something under his arm like this. He was with you when you had a very bad fever over 20 years ago. I am no good at dates. You nearly died. You were in great danger of your life. Others died at this time, but you survived. Correct. A sub-lieutenant, J. Frederick B., long passed over, was under my command at a time when I contracted a bad dose of East African fever up a river near Zanzibar. The second form was identified at once, for a close approximation to his surname was given, and the medium took on the conditions of his death, which was by drowning. He added, which was true, that on the day of his death abroad this officer was seen clairvoyantly in London on September 27, 1905. I strewed 20 cadavres it on a table at Southsea, and, turning my back on them, asked Mrs. Arnold, a clairvoyante, to select the picture of Iola, who, she had previously declared, was present. There were 2 in the collection. Within 2 minutes the psychic gave me one of the 2, and then took up another picture, saying, she says this is her sister. Correct, it was a little girl in a short frock. 40, on May 20, 1906, I called upon Miss McCready, to whom I was a perfect stranger. She gave me a good reading, and, among other things, described Iola with fair accuracy. Shortly after she said, somebody passed out of your life 6 years ago. I denied it, but the psychic got a clairaudient message, somebody did pass out of his life 6 years ago. On reconsideration, I remembered the death of a relative by marriage in whom I did not take particular interest, and who had passed over in the year 1900. This relative was a particular friend of Iola. The psychic was controlled 10 minutes later by her guide Sunshine, who gave a more accurate description of my guide. After some talk I handed my closed packet of 40 cadavres it into the hands of the medium, and went into the corner of the room, turning my back, and asked Sunshine to pick out the photo of anybody who was present in spirit. I waited in the corner, perhaps, 5 minutes, when the control called me back to the table and presented me with a portrait of Iola taken not long before she passed over. There were 3 photos of the spirit in the pack. I am at a loss to see how the selection of photographs under the circumstances I have mentioned, when I was not in a position to know which one the psychic or her control was handling, and therefore wholly unable to assist them by impression, can be attributed to any mundane intelligence whatever. It might be argued with some plausibility that the phenomenon was due to the agency of some earthbound spirit, who had accompanied me about for 2 years with the express intention of deceiving me at every séance that I attended. Such a being, having once discovered the photos of Iola, might impress the medium time after time to put one or two of them forward, but no person on earth could do it without some assistance, beneficent or malevolent. If I had tried this test once, the success might be put down to coincidence, for the chances are only 10 to 1 or 20 to 1 against the right choice being made, but the fact is I have scarcely ever failed to obtain this test from psychics of acknowledged powers. It had come off 4 times in America, 2 with faces downwards, and 10 times in England, and the selection of the picture was generally preceded by a good description of the person and face of Iola. I do not myself believe in the malevolent spirit theory. What motive would such a devil have in giving me a proof of immortality? For assuredly, if this test was not engineered by a devil, it was given by my guide herself, whose appearances and manifestations have been consistent throughout, leading me gradually to a belief that she is alive, and, therefore, that existence beyond the grave is a fact. I have long ago come to the conclusion that, on each of the occasions I have related, Iola was present in the room, and affected the selection of her own and her sister's pictures. I have 2 other incidents to record in which photographs played a part. On September 30, 1905, I gave Mrs. Davis, a clairvoyante, then in Portsmouth, my packet of 40, and asked her to pick out the portraits of any people who impressed her as being near to me. As was arranged on all other occasions when photographs were used, some were near relatives, some distant, some strangers, some friends. About half the pack were portraits of people alive. I turned my back to her. Presently she handed over my shoulder the photo of a lady taken at the age of 60 or thereabouts, saying, "I see a bright light upon this picture. I am confident that this lady is about to pass over shortly, if she has not already done so." The portrait was that of a very near and dear relative, who died 10 weeks later in her 91st year. She then gave out another relative for whom she prophesied an early death, which I fear will come true. Finally, she was told clairaudiently to take up the funny little one, and produced a carte de visite of Iola at the age of 11 years, taken nearly 50 years before. There were 2 of my guide in the collection. Mrs. Davis is a good clairvoyante. Twice I visited her shortly after the death of relatives. There was nothing in my dress to indicate bereavement, but on both occasions she saw Iola helping these people. By normal means she could not have learnt of the recent demise of either. One day on my entering her room, she said to me, "A man called Aldridge has been here this afternoon. He said, 'Tell him, that is, me, I have seen East.'" By no possible means could the woman have known normally that I had ever heard of these names. As a matter of fact, the former was an old naval captain whom I heard of, but never seen. He died in the West Country some months before. East had passed over many years before. He was a lieutenant, and I knew him slightly. I had never thought of either gentleman, but both belonged to the surveying branch of the Navy, to which I was attached myself before I retired, a fact of which the medium was ignorant. Aldridge was reputed to be mediumistic. He died at the advanced age of 90. On April 3, 1908, I had a sitting with Clary Bell in York Street, near Baker Street, London. Her reading, as it is called, was not very clear. She was controlled early in the sitting, and after some descriptions, more or less true, I handed to her my packet of 40 photos, in which there were 2 of Iola, and turned away. After the control had been looking at them some minutes, held in her medium's lap, I heard one fall to the floor. I looked round, and saw that it was one of the portraits of my guide. The clairvoyante picked it up and handled it, but said nothing at the moment. Presently the control went on talking, and giving a somewhat loose description of Iola. She then tried to make a selection again, and called me to receive the same portrait that had fallen to the floor. I told her that there was a second picture of the same spirit on her lap, and she gave me two photos, both of relatives who have the same Christian name as my guide, and who are considered to resemble her. There were more descriptions, and she came out of trance. In her normal state she tried to pick out photos, and gave me again the same picture of Iola and that of one of the relatives previously selected, and who resembled her most. The second portrait of my guide was not found. Now, what caused that one cart to fall off the medium onto the floor? There was plenty of room on the medium's capacious lap. Observe, the control did not recognize the significance of the little accident, and passed out that same picture after. Before I left the house, the medium said, "The conditions surrounding all those pictures are mixed up, as there is no paper between them. Probably the spirit threw her portrait out on the floor to separate it from the others. In my opinion, the selection was made in this way, and it was thrown on the floor intentionally, in which case the phenomenon is quite as evidential as the photograph tests through Mrs. Endicott. Clarabelle knew nothing whatever about me, and knows nothing now. Through the Mrs. Arnold referred to in my notes on photographic tests, I have had a great deal of planchette writing. Some of it is pure rubbish, it is nearly all of a private character. Some sentences bear internal signs of guesswork by the writer, but among the records of our many sittings I find abundant evidence of the presence of Iola. Mrs. Arnold knew nothing of my deceased relatives, there were no possible means of her acquiring such knowledge. She knew nothing of my house, into which she had never entered, yet the writing referred to relatives who had passed over, and alluded to assistance given them by Iola, who, from the first, signed her full earthly Christian names and surname. Allusions, also, were made to my house, which were correct. I have tried to spoil many of these messages, but some I cannot, they were so obviously spontaneous and unexpected. For instance, I asked one day, "Can you tell me whose portraits are those on either side of the fireplace in my dressing room?" The reply was quite clear, "Mine and that of your wife." "Correct, and who is between them?" "Father." "Correct, I have numerous relatives, near and distant." I cannot see any reason why so exact a reply should have been given, unless the spirit impressing the medium had actually seen the room and the pictures. Another time the spirit gave an answer which implied a knowledge of what my library contained and how articles were placed. On another she impressed the psychic to write out a foreign name, a most unusual one, that of a particular friend of hers when she was in earth life. My wife was frequently mentioned by her initials in such a way as I only in the family have written them. The crystal gazing of this medium was also sometimes very good. I have known her to describe faithfully our séance room in St. John's Wood, London, though at the time she had never been inside of it. A friend once came down to spend the weekend with me. On the Sunday morning he went to Mrs. Arnold, to whom he was a perfect stranger. A spirit manifested through planchette, and gave his surname. When asked for his Christian name he gave, not his real name, but a nickname that had been bestowed upon him by his comrades in Canada, where he had died. The fallacy of the mind-reading theory was very apparent when sitting with this psychic. I often asked questions, the replies to which were, so to speak, on the tip of my tongue, but I got either no answer or the wrong one. 41. I sat with Miss Earle in our room in George Street, Portman Square, two or three times. There were generally 12 to 15 people in the circle, and she gave messages to all in turn. At 7 p.m. on December 7, 1905, before the circle was formed, she said, "I see the form of a gentleman behind you. He has been in spirit life some years. He is holding out his arms as if to greet a lady whom I can also see. I sense these two are closely related to you, that they are husband and wife, and that you are their son." After the circle was formed, and my time came for a message, she talked in my ear as if controlled by my father, "I am in a ship with many on board, but we have not enough flags. Symbolical, I like your researches, I and others are helping you. The golden thread is nearly broken." "Q, what do you mean?" "A, one who is dear to us both. My mother passed away the following morning, having been unconscious for many hours. She had been bedridden for a short time, and was at a very advanced stage, but she was conscious at the time I met Miss Young, and the end was not expected so suddenly. I have no reason to suppose that the psychic knew, normally, either that my father was in spirit life or that my mother was in earth life. I thought then, and I think now, that this was a true prophetic vision, and that my father was actually present. 42, on November 4, 1905, Mr. von Borg, the well-known psychic, gave a séance at Southsea in a private house. I had been invited, but was unable to attend. My relative A. was stopping with me at the time, and I asked him to take my place, which he consented to do. He returned late, and told me that during the séance a spirit manifested to him. From his description I gathered that it was Iola. While he was talking to me in my library, standing against the fire soft hyphen place, he was partially controlled suddenly, rushed to a bureau where, at that time, I kept my records of psychical phenomena, and, muttering third on the middle row, dragged out a packet of papers, and, selecting one of the latter, which he handed to me, said, "What is this?" While I read it he kept on muttering, "Was I not right? Was I not right?" as if giving voice to a clairaudient message. The paper contained notes of a private séance of July 1905, in my room. A premonition was then given respecting a family trouble. A. said, "She wishes me to understand that she was not certain then, but she is now." I let A. read the paper after this, and when he was going to put the packet back in the bureau I said, "Let me have the papers." He then handed them to me, and was impressed to say, "Take the third." I did so, and found it contained references to the same matter during a séance dated April 1905, and the previous April I had been in some trouble. A misfortune threatened me that I did not know how to avert. I consulted my friend Miss Bates, who wrote inspirationally that all would come right, and, in July, I again asked Miss Bates to assist me. The answer this time was not so cheerful as before, but the spirit still gave it as her opinion that the trouble would pass away. In August it completely disappeared, how I know not, but I am convinced it was in some way through the influence of Iola, also that she partially controlled A. in my room and prompted his giving the papers to me. The two papers he placed in my hands were the notes of the séances with Miss Bates in April and July. The July paper was given first. In the bureau there were over 100 papers. On December 17, 1905, A., who was again my guest, went with me to Mrs. Arnold's for some planchette writing. Iola came and wrote for A., "I was with you and it was about your papers." Q., "What papers?" A., "Did I not get you to look for a paper out of a certain drawer?" Q., "Was that last message for Admiral Moore or for me?" A., "It was for you, one Saturday about a moon ago. I gave the message and you should not have forgotten, and the paper was not at V. B. von Borg, but on the parade, S. Western Parade. It is out of the question that Mrs. Arnold could have known anything about the curious scene in my library on November 4th. I have exposed some hundreds of plates in attempts to obtain photographs of spirits. A red flannel screen was used for background and a Jenner mercury lamp for illumination. About a third of the prints show abnormalities of different kinds. There are many very faint faces difficult to distinguish clearly, and none distinct enough to be reproduced by photography of the existing prints. Sensitives can see a great deal more in these prints than I do. On the other hand, quite half those to whom I have shown them can see nothing at all. Mr. Richard Bursnell often obtained genuine psychic photographs. He was a medium, and, when the power was with him, his pictures were reliable. But, like some other professional psychics, when his gift was in abeyance he faked. I have given to the London Spiritualistic Alliance a complete proof of a fraudulent production by this man. The negatives and the prints show unmistakably how the fraud is accomplished. I have, however, in my possession two or three of his photos that I believe are true evidences of spirit presence. The only proof is the likeness to the person when in earth life, together with the certainty that the photographer had no means of access to any existent photograph of that person. Duplicates, triplicates, and quadruplicates of Boursnell's spirit pictures are numerous. Some years ago a man was stopping with me who had photographs of three precisely the same spirit persons near him as I had near me. The attitude, face, and form were exactly the same, down to every crease in the robes. Boursnell's story was that spirits, having once entered his studio, reappeared again and again. This may be, but it seems improbable that they should keep for many years the same cast, so to speak, as they appear now. You can put a tracing of the form in one photograph over the form in another, and not be able to detect the smallest difference in detail. It cannot be doubted that some sitters bring better conditions than others, and these enabled Boursnell to exercise his gift of mediumship to the best advantage. I have seen several photographs obtained in his presence that I believe show genuine spirit forms behind or beside the sitters. He was also an excellent clairvoyant. Once he gave me an account of a very eccentric naval captain who died over 40 years ago. His peculiarities were well described, and the name of the ship he last commanded was mentioned. The information was not available to the public. Though I had heard of this officer, I had never met him. On another occasion he affirmed that he saw a marine who was drowned at the time of the capsizing of the Eurydice, and gave his name. I ascertained that there was such a man in the crew of that ill-fated ship. That showing on a sensitized plate is one of the hundred or more methods of spirits to prove their existence to mortals is, in my opinion, proved in the United States and this country by the many portraits which have been obtained. Some years ago the body of an old gentleman who died in London was taken to his country seat to be buried. The house was in the occupation of relatives, and the coffin was conveyed straight from the railway station to the church. A young lady, who was a guest in the house, and about to take her departure, took a photograph of the library during the time the funeral ceremony was in progress. When the negative was developed, the dead man was found in the picture sitting in the chair he usually occupied when alive. I have seen this picture, and cannot doubt that it is genuine. There are certain features in it which point to its fidelity, and the spirit form has been recognized by members of the family. Moreover, the circumstances under which it was obtained render the theory of imposture incredible. There is a phenomenon in connection with photographs that has not yet attracted sufficient attention. I allude to the precipitations of faces and forms on old photos which have been in the possession of one person many years. I have in my possession a carte de visite of a girl relative, taken at 15 years of age, at Brighton, in the year 1865. About 4 years ago the background of this picture began to show signs of what I thought was deterioration in the varnish. The defect, as it appeared to be, became lighter and lighter in color. 6 or 8 months later the faint impression of a face was discernible. It is now clear that the face is that of the young lady's father. The eyes are closed as if in sleep, but the features resemble those in an existing portrait. He was alive at the time the portrait was taken, and did not pass over till 3 years later. Why he should appear in this way I am unable to explain, but I am satisfied that the image is no fancied coincidence suggested by the decay of chemicals. 43. I have in my possession a photograph of Iola taken at the age of 15. There is one face faintly precipitated in the background over her head, and 5 on the dress. The initials of one sister and the name of another are impressed on the dress. It is a curiosity. I have seen precipitations on other photos in my collection. This phenomenon is a mild introduction to the colored precipitations done by Spirit Agency in the presence of the Bangs sisters at Chicago, which I will describe in a later chapter. I had interviews with several other clairvoyants in England than those I have mentioned. Most of the information conveyed was of a private character. Good tests came through Ronald Brayley, J. Van Gogh, Otto von Borg, and others. The relation of what occurred at these seances would only weary my readers, without adding appreciably to the evidence already adduced in support of my belief that those whom I once, in my ignorance, thought dead are very much alive. It became more and more plain to me that the presentation of all the delicate phenomena of spiritism depended for its success, in a large measure, on the mental condition of the sitter.